Church, will you join me in prayer as our little people head to the reef as we get our minds and our hearts ready to open your word? Lord Jesus, will you be with us this morning as we engage your scriptures, as we engage our minds and our hearts, as we engage the love that you have for us? Will you guide us, Lord, as we dig in? Will you open our eyes and our hearts and our minds, Lord Jesus, as we try to learn more about who you are? Will you keep us engaged, Lord? Will you be with these little people as they go off to learn more about who you are, Lord Jesus? Will you let them be drawn into you? Will you let the stories that are told in Sunday school be transformative to them? Will you allow them to be excited about who you are? Will you let not their energy and their enthusiasm and their inquisitiveness leave this room? Let us keep those things here a little bit so that we may dig in as well. Lord, will you let the thoughts of my heart and the meditations of my mind be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. Amen. We're in Genesis. We're in Genesis chapter 39. So if you like to follow along in an old school Bible, it is just real easy to find this time. It's right at the beginning. We're in verse 39. If you like to follow along on your favorite device, you're welcome to do that as well. But I would encourage you to turn to chapter 39. And we're going to be in verses 6 to 23. We've been rolling through Genesis, and I know we've been steamrolling through Genesis. We've been going really fast. We started right after Easter with Genesis 1, and we actually just have a couple more weeks in Genesis before we wrap up and head to 1 Thessalonians for the rest of our time before Advent. But we've been rolling through Genesis, and so we've been grabbing big, big chunks. Today, we're really going to focus on this story of Joseph and his interaction with Potiphar's wife. But we've got to catch up from where we were, because we dropped off with Jacob, and then we jumped a good chunk to get to Joseph. In the meantime, Jacob was married. We started to read that. We started to hear about Jacob and Esau and that kind of story. But we know that Jacob has 12 sons. And the highlight of his sons, at least in his mind, was Joseph. He really dug in with Joseph. He really resonated with Joseph in some big ways. And Joseph, because of his resonance with his dad, but also because Joseph tended to be a little bit self-focused when he was younger, maybe a lot self-focused, maybe overly self-focused. We might call him cocky. Joseph ticked off all the other brothers. They were just pretty angry with him all the time. He, in fact, had dreams that he made sure they knew about where he was going to rule over them. And he was the youngest, and so it's like the little twerpy brother telling the older brother that I'm the stuff, and, you know, kind of chomping at him a little bit. And the older brothers just didn't like that at all. And yet his father saw in him something that was he was drawn to. And gave him a fancy cloak to wear. Modern to some of us who are a little older, there's a play called Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat. That's not real modern if you're talking to my daughter, probably, but that's pretty modern for the rest of us. Don't get too Technicolor in it. It was a robe that Joseph was given by his dad that marked for him and highlighted that he thought maybe he was royalty. This was a royal cloak. It was not a workman's cloak that went out into the fields and did those kind of things. It was a cloak of royalty. And so he was favored, and his brothers knew it, and they didn't like it. And so they got mad when he was out in the field with them one day and threw him in a pit and sold him into slavery into Egypt. I've had nasty thoughts about my little brother at times. Really have. And I was even going to say that, and he was going to be here this morning. I didn't get to say that with him here to highlight it, but I did have some nasty thoughts about my little brother at times, but never enough that I was going to throw him in a pit and sell him into slavery. And they even faked his death with his dad. Like, they covered his fancy royal robes with blood of lamb's blood and took him back to his dad and pretended to his dad and lied to him through their teeth that he was dead. So not only were they willing to treat their brother terribly, they were willing to treat their dad and their mom terribly about this, because Joseph was now just dead. He was gone. They were mourning. It was awful. And yet he was sold into slavery. The slave traders took him to Egypt, and he was sold to a owner, to a slave master named Potiphar. And that's where we catch up with the story. So, long ways from Jacob on into Joseph. Joseph's got some really neat places to go and stories to tell. And so, if you haven't read that before, haven't spent time with those stories I just told you, we're in 39. Go back a few chapters and read it. And then go back those same chapters and read it again and read it again and read it again. It's awesome. The stories are awesome. They read like ancient stories, and so you got to spend time with them. But then just keep reading on into what's going to happen with Joseph going forward. But he was sold into slavery. This man named Potiphar bought him as a slave. And over time, we're not told how long, but Potiphar started to trust Joseph deeply, and that's where we pick up in verse 6. So look at verse 6 with me, chapter 39, verse 6. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. Think about that. Who do you trust with everything you have? Who do you trust with everything you have? Maybe my wife. And yet, I don't really love it when she drives my car because she leaves it trashed. In my book, I trust Aaron with everything that I have. And yet, do you think about who that is? And then, do you still kind of keep pulling things back and kind of giving directions? And is it really that I trust, or what? I mean, think about that. Who do you trust with everything? And that's what Moses is telling us as he's writing Genesis, that Potiphar trusted a slave, a Hebrew slave, with everything he had. Think about how Joseph had risen. He had gone from being thrown in a pit by his brothers, shown how much they disdained him, how much they hated him, how awful he was in their eyes. They threw him down, and then they dragged him off. Can you imagine having your brothers actually hand you over by hand to slave traders and say, he's out of here, and you're dead to us, and that's what we're going to go tell our parents? And he went from that low awfulness to being trusted with everything in his master's house. Trusted with everything. Still in verse 6. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. This guy had handed off so much that all he had to worry about was the SpaghettiOs or whatever he wanted for lunch that day. That was all he was worried about. And then the story changes a little bit. And you hear this now, Joseph, and that's a key to us. We've got to switch over and we've got to start thinking a little bit differently. We've got to keep in mind what we've just learned. But the story's starting to change. It says, now Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. So we get told this story about how good-looking Joseph was, and then we get a little glimpse into Potiphar's wife and probably Potiphar's marriage. It couldn't have been very great. But Potiphar's wife went after Joseph and wanted him to go sleep with her, wanted him to go to bed with her. And you all know this. She wasn't looking for a deep nap. She wasn't looking to just go to sleep in the bed. She was wanting sex. She was wanting to go have all of that kind of thing happening. And she said, let's go. I want you to go to bed with me. Come on, let's do it. How do you handle temptation? How do you handle temptation? Can you even think about in your mind what tempts you? What are the things that tempt you? I think it's important for us to mark those things. What is it that tempts you? If you can't name it, you probably are missing it. We need to be aware of what those things are that distract us from who God is. How are you tempted? But Joseph refused, verse 8. And he says this, with me in charge, my master does not concern himself with anything. We've learned about this already, but he's saying this to Potiphar's wife. He doesn't concern himself with anything. Everything he owns is entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, he's saying to her, because you're his wife. And then he says this, how then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against, who do you expect him to say right there? How could I possibly, knowing all this, he's given me everything under my care. He's given me the power over all this stuff. How could I possibly sin against Potiphar, right? That's who you expect it to be written in. But did you read it with me? Look at it. How could I possibly do this and sin against God? Joseph has not lost sight of who his focus ought to be. And it's not Potiphar, his earthly master. Joseph is saying, he has given me all of this influence. He has given me all of this responsibility. He's withheld one thing from me. He's withheld one thing from me. Now hold on. Where else have we heard that story a little bit in our learning through Genesis? There was only one thing withheld. What other story has this one thing withheld? Remember, we've got to see this whole process as a whole story, one big story. It's not a bunch of little stories. It's one big one. From Genesis to maps, it's one big story. Where else was one thing withheld? Creation, right? There was this one tree that couldn't be eaten from, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then what happened? Who came? Satan came, and he whispered, and we were told that he was a serpent. And so we hear this little hissing sound, slithering sound through the garden as Satan tempts Adam and Eve. Do you hear the same hiss, the same slither? There's one thing being held back from Joseph, and yet there is a temptation here. There's a slither and a hiss. You hear it in the story? Joseph is brought out of Israel. He's thrown into slavery, and yet he's grown into this incredibly responsible person in a powerful household. It's almost like a little Eden, isn't it? He lives lavishly and richly, and he's living in this little Eden, and there's one thing being withheld, and yet there's still temptation. There's still temptation for him. And that temptation comes in the form of Potiphar's wife. And she says, I want to go to bed with you. And we know that sex is a temptation. We know that sex outside of marriage is a temptation. We hear about those stories all the time. We see it all over the place. You can't turn the television on or the radio on or any kind of media on and what sex isn't just being bombarded in our faces. So we know it's a temptation, and it was then. This is thousands of years ago, and yet it was still a temptation, and it's still the deceiver trying to get to the hearts of God's people. And yet, unlike Adam and Eve, Joseph says, I have been given so much and am responsible for so much. How in the world could I possibly sin against God in this moment? Remember, God's presence empowers faithful living, and it may also lead to suffering at times. But faithfulness chooses God over temptation. We see Joseph's faithfulness choosing God. Yes, he knew who had given him that responsibility on earth, but he knew who was really giving him that opportunity. And so he looked to God in that time. And yet she didn't give up. It's not like we walk in and temptation faces us and then it's over because we've denied it. What happens usually? It bombards us. It pursues us. It's in our faces over and over and over. What is that temptation for you? It's different for everybody, but what is that temptation? It bombards you. Look at verse 9:10. And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he still refused her. This wasn't one temptation. She walks in, She says, I want to go to bed with you. He says, no thanks. They walk off. She comes back day after day after day. Do you resonate with that kind of temptation? Do you resonate with the temptation that comes day after day after day and bombards you moment by moment by moment? Church, I do. I live in this world too. I struggle like crazy with temptation at times. And it comes day after day. If something's tempting to you, it's probably tempting to you not just on Mondays, but probably every day of the week. How do you face that temptation? Day after day, yet, comma, he refused to go to bed with her, but look at what else. He refused to go to bed with her, but look what else it says, still in verse 10, or even be with her. He fled from temptation. Joseph fled from temptation. Church, we cannot be proud enough not to flee from temptation. We cannot just be strong and say, I can do. We're given an example of what happens when we get faced temptation, and it's over and over and relentless. Joseph gives us a perfect example of how to handle that. He flees from it. He wouldn't even be around her. He wouldn't even be around her. And you can say to me, well, maybe she wasn't nice, or maybe she wasn't kind, or maybe she wasn't pretty, or whatever it is. He wouldn't even be around her. I bet she was nice and kind and pretty and all of those things. She was a temptation to him, and yet he just said, I'm not even going to be around her. I'm going to walk away. What is that temptation for you? Are you willing to walk away from it? Are you willing to say, God has given me so much. He has given me breath and life and my family and a world to live in and a church to go to and a city to be around and people that love me. Are you willing to say, God has done all of that? How in the world could I possibly sin against him? Do you live that way? Or do you live in such a way that you just try to hide that sin? Let's continue to read this. One day he went into the house, verse 11, and attended to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak. This was a persistent lady, y'all. She caught him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand. When I read that, he left his cloak in her hand, I don't think you can read it that way. I think you need to read, he ran, and when he ran, his cloak got torn off of him or pulled off of him like a jacket. He left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. Do you think that Joseph was just reacting to that situation? Or do you think that Joseph maybe had thought through, how am I going to handle sin? How am I going to handle temptation? And had processed it in his head, and he knew what he was going to do. I don't think you can face a situation like that and react and be assured that you're going to handle that just right. I know I don't usually handle situations right off the cuff first time necessarily, but sometimes I can do it better when I prepared. I was watching this documentary this week, and it was about 9/11 and about first responders to the Twin Towers. I'm blown away by that, by the way. But we know those stories, right? The planes flew in, the towers started to burn and crash, and people were running away, which is the reaction that you would have to some emergency like that. You just run away, you flee from it. But these first responders, it's unbelievable. They went to it, right? Like, we know the stories. They went to it. Some of them were caused terrible harm and injury and death, and even long-term injury and death in terms of lung disease and all that sort of stuff that happened because they went to that crisis. They had to train for that. They had to prepare in their minds that they were going to go at the crisis. It wasn't just that the crisis came and then they just ran to it because that's the natural response. It's not. The natural response to that was what everybody else was doing and trucking on out of there. That's the natural response. In fact, to the point that they were willing to hurt others to get away from there at times. Run them over, push them down the stairs, walk on them. We see that happen all the time at big events where there's lots of people and then something scares them and people run over people and kill them and hurt them terribly because they're fleeing and they're panicking. Turn that completely the other way, 180, and flee to the situation. They don't do that if they're not prepared for that. You and I don't handle sin properly and temptation properly unless we're prepared for that. Joseph had prepared by knowing who he is and who God is and who he is in respect to God and how God expected him to live his life. And he was impacted by who God is in his life. God's presence empowers faithful living, even when it leads to suffering. Faithfulness chooses God over temptation. Faithfulness chooses God over temptation. But faithfulness may cost more than we expect. Let's see what happens. When he saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called after her household servants. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. So she sees Joseph run out, and she starts freaking out and screaming and saying that he had tried to hurt her, tried to molest her, tried to do anything, and he's making sport of her, and everything goes to chaos. Everything goes to pot for Joseph. And if you continue to read through, she kept his cloak by her side, verse 16, until his master came. She told the story that Joseph had tried to seduce her. Joseph had tried to be awful to her. And look at verse 19. When his master heard the story, his wife told him all lies, right? This is how your slave treated me, she said. And he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Joseph did the right thing. Joseph handled it properly. He had been handling it properly. And so in stories, the way we want them to be written, the way we want our story written, is when we do all the right things, it should work out in our favor, right? It should work out for our best. If we do it right, we should be wealthy, we should be happy, it should be easy, we should be healthy, we should have all the stuff that we want. Church, that's called the prosperity gospel. And it's a freaking lie. Sometimes faith costs us dearly, even when we're right. Even when we've done the right thing. Faithfulness may cost more than we expect. Doing the right thing does not always produce immediate rewards. Does not always produce immediate rewards. Joseph obeyed God and lost everything. He was sent to prison. He was sent to jail for what he believed and what he knew was right, for treating this woman with respect, for treating her the way that God had created her to be treated, for doing all the things the right way, for not being awful to her and treating her like a prostitute. He actually did everything exactly right, and yet he went to prison. His integrity cost him his position, his reputation, his freedom. How much do you follow Christ? How deeply are you willing to follow Christ? Do you live with that kind of integrity? Do you live under that kind of truth? And then the truth of that is also that the world often misunderstands or even opposes those who choose righteousness. The world we live in is anti this kind of living, this kind of life. Integrity leaves us vulnerable to false accusations. He left his coat, and that very proof of his righteousness was used as proof against him. Just because we're following the Lord the right way doesn't mean our life is going to be puppy dogs and rainbows all the time. It doesn't mean that. And yet, the end of the story is not here yet. The end of the story is coming. Joseph chooses obedience even when no one else is watching. That was one of Sophie T's kindergarten teacher's favorite statements. Your character is proven by who you are when nobody else is watching. Your character is proven by being who you are when nobody else is watching. Joseph could likely have hidden his sin from everyone except God. Joseph, in the world's sense, it would have made more sense for him to do whatever his master's wife said than all the rest of this imprisonment and going to jail and being embarrassed and taking all the responsibility from him wouldn't have happened to him. And yet he wouldn't have been living a life of integrity the way God wanted him to live. And that's a bigger issue for him. God's silence is not absence. You do expect God in this part of the story to come rushing in like Superman and saying, no way, that's not how it works. Joseph is right. You want Potiphar not to believe his wife. You want some other servant to say, no, I actually saw it. That's not what happened. And yet Joseph goes to prison, and it doesn't tell us how long he was there. This is part of the next part of the story that we're not going to get to today, but it's probably something like 13 years. Something like over a decade he spent in prison. So, God's presence empowers faithful living even when it leads to suffering. Faithfulness chooses God over temptation. Faithfulness also may cost us more than we expect. But faithfulness trusts God's presence in every circumstance. Faithfulness trusts God's presence in every circumstance. So look at this as we get to the second part of verse 20. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. While Joseph was in prison, the Lord was with him. Do you feel like there's a place that you're imprisoned that you just can't kind of get out of, even though you've done what you think the Lord wants you to do and you're living your life the way that you're supposed to be living it? And that could have something to do with relationships. It could have something to do with health. It could have something to do with jobs. It could have something to do with financial places. It could have something to do with age and stay. Any of those things, do you feel like there's a place that you are just stuck because of the choices you've made that are trying to make choices that are holy choices? But while Joseph was there in the prison, second part of verse 20, the Lord was with him, verse 21, and look, he showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. Even in prison, especially in prison, the Lord was faithful and his presence never left Joseph. Church, God's presence never, ever, ever leaves you. God's presence never, ever, ever, ever leaves you. That doesn't mean it always feels great. That doesn't mean it's always easy. It's not. But God's presence never leaves you. God's presence didn't leave Joseph when he was being tempted. In the moments that he was tempted, God said, I'm with you. And Joseph lived into that and was focused on who God is. The consequences of that decision made Joseph end up in prison. And God's presence never left him. Faithfulness trusts God's presence in every circumstance. His presence remains constant. And something that's hard to imagine, maybe even hard to believe, but is absolutely truth, is that God's presence is a greater gift than immediate rescue. God's presence is a greater gift than immediate rescue. Can you possibly believe that? That might be one of the hardest things that I wrote down this week. That God's presence is a greater gift than immediate rescue. I want immediate rescue. I want immediate perfect. I want immediate easy. I want immediate convenience. I don't want to be hot. This week it's been brutally hot. I don't like being hot. I haven't even wanted to go outside. I try to let the dogs out and they look at me like I'm crazy. They don't want to be hot either. God's presence is greater than a gift than immediate rescue. Joseph is in prison for a long time. God doesn't just go get him out. God doesn't just say, let's open the doors miraculously. We see him do that in the New Testament with Paul, that the gates of the prisons are just open. That's not what God does for Joseph. Are you willing to ask when you're struggling like that, or when you feel like you've been imprisoned in something, are you willing to ask God, what are you doing and how can I learn from you? Are you willing to ask that question of him? Are you willing to humble yourself? Are you willing to understand that you probably don't have the same perspective that God does? You can't. You're not God. He can see so much from the beginning of time to the end of time, all at one time. God can see it all and be it all and live it all. And are you willing to trust in that? And are you willing to say, God, what do I need to learn? How do I need to grow? What are you trying to communicate to me here? Are you willing to be right where you are and content in that? If you want to learn more about that, there's a great book, a little book called The Practicing the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. It's a great little book. Challenge you. If you want to read that, hit me up. I'll make sure you get a copy of it, or I'll help you remember it. But Practicing the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence is a great one for that. Because the truth is, God has a plan. And God is preparing Joseph for a future he cannot yet imagine. And I'm not going to spoil alert it. I want you guys to read that part of that story. I'm not going to go forward very far in that. But God is preparing Joseph for a future he cannot yet imagine. And I know that God is preparing you for a future you cannot yet imagine, even if that future is thinking about it in that eternal sense and not in the immediate sense. God is preparing you, Joseph, for a future he cannot yet imagine. But the truth of it is, faithfulness today prepares us for a greater opportunity tomorrow. Being faithful today makes a difference. Are you willing to be faithful today? Just a little bit of a spoiler alert. I want you to see what happened. Joseph is going to become a great figure in Egypt. I mean, great figure in Egypt. And God is going to use that to help Joseph rescue his very family in Israel. But he needs to be in a certain place with a certain Pharaoh to make that happen. To do that, what did God do? He had his brothers abuse him and throw him into a pit, sell him into slavery. And where did he send him? Egypt. Joseph had to be in Egypt to make this happen. And then Joseph went to Potiphar's house and was this wonderful, responsible, trusted person in Potiphar's house. But that's not where God needed him. And so he sent him to prison. But do you see the prison he sent him to? The prison where the king's prisoners were. The king's prison. The Pharaoh's prison. He sent him to the Pharaoh's prison. So all of these terrible things that happened to Joseph got him closer and closer and closer to being exactly where and with whom he needed to be who God created him to be. Every one of those moves put him there. And I guarantee you, when Joseph was walked into those prison doors and the gates were shut, he wouldn't have said that was the truth of the story right there. He would have said, I just ended up in this pit because I did the right thing. But God used it. He, Joseph, had faith. And he is God's provision down the road. And so we'll talk about that more. God's presence empowers faithful living, even when it leads to suffering. Faithfulness chooses God over temptation. It may cost more than we expect. And it trusts God's presence in every circumstance. And then you say, okay, Kurt, so what? Now what? Well, I have a few thoughts about that. I'd love for you to think about these things. Build your convictions before temptation comes. Build your convictions before temptation comes. Know what it is you believe and what it is you're willing to do and not do before temptation gets there. Because when the crisis arrives, like the first responder, you are not going to run into the fire unless that's the way you need to go because you've trained for it. Ask yourself, What choice honors God instead of asking yourself, how close can I get without sinning? I probably should have highlighted that one on the short, on the board. Ask yourself, what choice honors God, not how close can I get without sinning? Don't underestimate the value of avoiding situations that make obedience harder. Don't underestimate the value of avoiding situations that make obedience harder. Don't measure God's faithfulness by your circumstances. Trust that God is at work even when you cannot see the outcome. Be faithful where God has placed you today. Be faithful where God has placed you today. Will you pray with me? Lord, I thank you for this time. I thank you for the love that you have for us. I thank you for the life that you've given us to live. I ask you, Father, to guide and protect and keep us. I ask you, Father, to encourage us where we are. Encourage us where we are struggling with temptation. Encourage us where we feel like we may be imprisoned. Remind us, Lord, that you are with us always. And help us experience you, see you, feel you, know you more fully through all of it. Lord, will you bring us into your story? Will you bring us into your text? Will you let us be an encouragement to one another? And will you feel our worship as we continue to spend time together this morning? In your name I pray. Amen.